Okay, if we can establish a quorum and call to order, please.
Good afternoon, everyone. Vice Chair Woody.
Here.
Member Dorfman.
Here.
Member Johnson.
Here.
Member Hoverstein.
Here.
Okay, establish now that we have established a quorum for today, do we have any committee member announcements or presentations at this point? Oh, and the time is, what time is it right now? If you could announce that. I'm sorry, 3:03. It's 3:03 right now. Let me make sure I've got that clear. It's 3:03 right now. Bringing to order the meeting of CFAC for the City of Morro Bay. Back to the issue of committee member announcements and presentations. Do we have any? I have a presentation announcement that I'd like to make at this point. I've noticed that our chair, Stephen Peck, is not here today. It is a highly unwritten rule that if somebody doesn't show up to one of our meetings, because we do have the best meetings of all the groups out there, especially that Planning Commission and Bill's group for the Planning Commission, that he must bring cookies to the next meeting. So that being said, Mr. Peck, I know as detailed as he is, he's going to be watching this tonight. He's going to be responsible for bringing all of us on this committee and all of our staff members cookies at the next meeting. That's just the rule we have. I'm sure he will see this. So that is my presentation for right now. Okay.
Thank you, Chair Woody and members of the committee. I'm Steve Conway, Interim Assistant City Manager at Admin Services Director, and I do have just a quick update. I have been here, I guess, since early October. I have some family matters I need to attend to, so I will be, and I have let the City Manager know that I will physically be completing next week, so I can also be in attendance for the council meeting, and then I will likely be serving more in a remote capacity, but I'm definitely going to be, I let the city know that I'm going to be with them through, hopefully through the next adopted budget and also through the recruitment. We had a recruitment, I guess I jumped the gun a little bit. I had thought we would might have a new permanent replacement for myself. That hasn't happened yet, although I know city is very intent on finding the right candidate and a good candidate for the city, so I'm sure that that progress will be made and there'll be a successful appointment. But in the meantime, I told the city manager I'd certainly be helping in whatever role I can. I just won't be able to be here as physically as much as I have been past few months.
But you will be remotely with us.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, good. That's my intention.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. So that's my report.
Okay, and that's under the director update at this point. Okay. Anything else before we go forward with more items on here? Okay. Did you have? Okay. Okay. I'd like to come to public comment at this point. And open it up to public comment for members of the audience wishing to address the CFAC on city business matters not on the agenda may do so at this time. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address this group?
Me.
We have somebody, yes.
Yes, Greg Qualick, Public Works Director, City of Morro Bay. Very briefly, just would like to remind the CFAC that I did send an email out to everyone here with some details about the settlement agreement with the city design build contractor for the sewer treatment plant, Phelan's Black and Veatch, and we were not able to put together a joint meeting with the PWAB for this cycle, but you do have that information. We have the PWAB meeting tomorrow, so if you have any comments you'd like to pass along to the PWAB, you can email me at gkwolek@morrobayca.gov, or you can email the PWAB at pwab@morrobayca.gov. Thank you.
And, of course, members of this committee are more than welcome to go, I'm assuming, and attend. Okay. Do we have anybody on the queue that is listening in that would like to make a comment?
We have
Currently no raised hands in the queue.
Okay. And anybody else in the audience would like to address? Okay. So we will go ahead and close public comment at this point and move on to the consent calendar. I'm seeing three quick items on here. Are there any of these items that would like to be discussed amongst the committee or pulled off the agenda just to discuss at all? Or do I have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
I move to approve the consent calendar.
I'll second that.
Okay.
Vice Chair Woody?
Yes.
Member Johnson?
Yes.
Member Dorfman?
Yes.
Okay, and the consent calendar has been approved.
And
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. Of course.
I get a vote, too.
Member Hoverstein?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Now it's really approved. Yes, there you go. So my mistake. I do apologize about that. Moving on to the next item, item B under business. We have a fiscal year 23-24 mid-year budget and financial update by our city staff. So I'll leave it up to you guys.
Thank you, Chair Woody, members of the committee, Steve Conway once again. Very happy to present this report to the CFAC committee. Staff, I want to congratulate staff. There was a lot of late-night number crunching to get the committee this information. We wanted the committee to have as the most recent financial information we could provide you in terms of this fiscal year, how the budget is tracking, along with estimates of the future 5 years and some discussions that may follow that. We also provided as part of your staff report that we are seeking because we heard loud and clear from the committee that, ask us what you need from us. And we have done that. We have a couple of objectives tonight before I get into the report. One is that we would like your recommendations or your recommendations onto the council. This item will be going forward next week with certain budget adjustments that are in this report, and we'll be going into that later. And then also there's a review of the CFAC Q&E revenues and expense, and there's some decisions or some input that we would value from the committee in terms of the adopted budget, how it's been how those funds have been allocated this fiscal year, but also as we plan for 24-25 fiscal year. There are some ramifications due to the way revenues are coming in on Q&E that we probably would need to hear from the committee and their thoughts on that so that we can take those, under consideration as staff starts to develop the plans for next year's budget and Q&E and the funding and the allocations of those resources and recommending those that use of those funds to this city council. So the good news is that for the current fiscal year we are tracking very well with our revenues, and also on the expenditure side we have information that we from the financial end of it through January 31, and we are running below the 50% level on expenses, which is great for this time of the fiscal year. We only have a few more months to go to get to June 30th, and our revenues are trending. We received 60% of our budgeted revenues, so that's all good. We're trending as planned, and in the case of expenditures, we're coming under budget, which is. When you're tracking and doing a mid-year review, that's always good news. It can be a lot of factors. It could be vacancies, and there could, in terms of the expenditure savings. But it's always good that you're not overexpending, and you're not having a trend where you're exceeding 50% or more at this time of year. So that's good. The mid-year budget report that you have in front of you is an executive that has an executive summary, talks about some of the major issues, and one of the big things I want to cover right from the start is that you will notice that one of the things that the summary talks about is that there is revenue adjustment on the Q&E revenues available in terms of what would be available to expend. So we're proposing an expenditure reduction of approximately $700,000, and that was because staff had been advised by the city's auditors that they were not to do the usual accrual of Q&E revenue at the end of June 30, 2023. However, the auditors reversed that opinion, and staff was informed as recently as this weekend that was really not the case, that staff should have been accruing it, and staff had always done that. So it was just an auditor change of philosophy. So we accrued that back, which meant that the starting balance for this fiscal year was approximately it covers the $700,000 budget amendment that we thought we would. It actually added another $800,000 to the year-end beginning balance and the fund balance. I'm trying not to get too complicated because I'm an accountant, but basically that change in the methodology allowed us to restore the fund balance close to the amount that was planned in the budget. So the $700,000 adjustment for the paving or the capital program does not need to be made, and we have provided you revised Q&E and general fund worksheets and that incorporate those changes.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
The amount you're talking about, is that the, like, the sales tax that was earned? Oops. That was earned last year.
Yes.
That should have been in last year's reports.
Yes.
Okay.
And what happens is at year end, there's a 2-month lag, May and June,
right,
that don't get paid to the city until July and August. Typically, if you have, for an accountant, you would accrue this back to the year in which
right.
it was collected.
Okay.
The auditors advise us don't do that. Then they change their mind. No, you need to do that. So now we've accrued it as normal as we normally would.
Right.
And that
okay.
has now eliminated that problem in this fiscal year. Yeah.
You mentioned something about the $700,000 doesn't need to be paid to capital projects.
That's the transfer. There's a transfer from Q&E funds.
Right. Is that a general capital project fund, or was it a specific capital project?
I believe that was for the paving program in the capital projects fund. So there's a planned expenditure from Q&E.
Paving? Is that at that $700,000? Does that cover that?
The $700,000 was a recommended reduction from Measure Q&E funding, which would correspond to both a revenue and an expenditure reduction in the capital projects fund for that specific project.
Fund. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That was my, okay, I got it. Thank you.
Yeah, so yeah. it was
Thank
the you. Annual
no,
payment
I missed
management
that. Thank
program.
You. Okay.
okay.
Thank you, Melissa. That's exactly right. It's a $700,000 reduction, basically, of that planned. Or it's not necessary. I'm getting myself. It's a $700,000 that does not need to be reduced. So one of the things that was new this year as part of the mid-year report that you have in front of you is that we staff took – it took some extra time, but we made an estimate of how we believe the general fund would be finishing the fiscal year for fiscal year 23-24. And as you can see, we had an adopted budget where we showed where would be best for them to view this, except on just on the slide, I guess, would probably be the best. Let me see that a little better. Yeah, and it's also in the report. But here on the side, you can see that what that means in terms of the improvements to revenue and expenditure that we have forecasted, that we've improved our general fund position. We think we're going to end up in a better position in terms of the general fund unassigned balance. That's where the savings or any excess revenues or savings on the expenditure side end up. typically is in the unassigned fund balance, and you can see that the budget was $548,000, and we've improved that to $2.6 million. So that's good news, and we're this is a fairly confident number that we're coming up with there, so that's positive. Why that's positive is that with this improvement in revenues and expenditures, we do have a couple of budget adjustments that we're recommending that would need a funding source. They don't have, in many cases, we'll have an expenditure adjustment that has a matching revenue with it, but in some cases in the mid-year that you have in front of you, that was not the case, so we would have to pull it from the fund balance. Since we have more fund balance than we thought we would have when we adopted the budget, that's a good thing because that means there's some monies available to fund some of the unfunded mid-year budget adjustments that are being requested.
Just as a point of clarification, this is another example of an update that has occurred since we published the original report. That figure, the 2.6 million, is increased from the 2.1 million that was originally published. So just like there were accrual adjustments in the Measure Q&E fund, there were similar adjustments in the general fund.
Correct. The similar projection has also been made for Measure Q&E. And you can see that also has that fund balance, ending fund balance, has slightly improved from 85,000 to 223,000. So we wanted to kind of talk about how we are doing this year, and I've spent some time on that already. But as I've stated, although the revenues have improved and they have improved from our adopted budget, which is good, they've improved in fairly modest ways. I think $200,000 on property tax, $150,000 on interest earnings, some of those things. So they haven't been huge increases. They've been favorable and they're good, and it's better than declines. They aren't real robust growth that we're seeing in terms of our major revenues. So they're fairly flat, and we're not projecting in the future a big increase. We've just received our sales tax estimates from HDL, our vendor who helps us with those projections, and we've received updated information from the County of San Luis Obispo for next year for property tax. So we're not seeing a huge growth there. On the salary and benefit side, as we mentioned, salaries and with the benefit side, including the pensions, they still remain a tough challenge for the city. We have a recent salary survey that indicates that the city of Morro Bay is a little low on the salary range in comparison with many of its comparison cities. And we have the town or city has upcoming negotiations with all of its bargaining units. So those are always going to add stress to the expenditure side of the ledger in terms of demands for, I think everyone's aware that with the pandemic and the economy and whatnot, I think a lot of labor has been looking for increases. You know, this has been kind of a national news item that people are interested in improving their economic situation. So this will be another challenge the city will, for those negotiations. And the city still continues to recover from the storm last year. There's that continues, that will remain a challenge for the foreseeable future.
Can I ask a question about that? Because I recall from the May meeting last year that they talked about $20 million in FEMA grants were applied for. Do we have any status on obtaining those grants?
I think I'll let our Public Works Director speak to that item.
Thank you, Member Johnson, and thank you, Steve. Yeah, so we had a preliminary estimate that the damages from last year's storms totaled around $20 million. The big driver for that high number is the seawater facilities, the docks, the revetments, and the seawalls. And so I want to try to answer your question concisely. So it's not so much that we're applying for for grants for all of that. Some of that maybe we're trying to get from other sources, those more expensive facilities. We're hoping that the Army Corps of Engineers, who built a lot of those facilities decades ago, will take responsibility for that, and we are in discussions with them about some of that. There are two categories of FEMA claims, and one of them is for work that's already been completed. And for that, we are having weekly meetings with FEMA to try to recover those funds. So that's monies that the city already spent. We're trying to recover that back. Now, that said, FEMA only pays back at 75%. California, state of California, will pay back, I believe it's 17.625% or something like that. And that leaves the city on the hook for about 6 or 7%. And so we are looking at maybe getting some of that money back. It's not going to be a $20 million figure. And then the second category of funds that we're looking at getting from FEMA is for work that we have not done yet. But to obtain that money from FEMA, we actually have to do the work first. So if something broke down or something didn't work, or, you know, we sustained damages, well, we need to then go fix that thing that was damaged and then try to get the money back. And due to, you know, staff capacity and other issues, it's very unlikely that we'll be doing some of that work in the near term. And so that's a conversation that we'll be bringing to the PWAB and the CFAC and the City Council, hopefully in March or April, in terms of what do we actually want to try to recover. So roundabout way of answering your question is, you know, it's not like we're going to get a $20 million check in the mail. You know, maybe we'll get $500,000 in the next year or so.
Thank you.
Moving on, we wanted to touch briefly on some of the major categories of our general fund, which we call our key revenue sources. And this is where we can really take a look at mid-year about how are we doing on some of our major revenues. And this is where I was mentioning that the good news is if you look at the bottom line, we had an adopted budget where we estimated that we had $19.5 or $6 million worth of revenue we expected for the year, and we're actually predicting that we'll be closer to 19.8. So we had a $200,000 growth in our estimate for the year, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. We exceeded budget, and where those occurred mostly were in the if you look at these categories, as I mentioned, property tax. We received an update from the county, San Luis Obispo, and we're trending a higher there by a couple hundred thousand dollars. And we also, because of the Fed interest rate has not been lowered, and we're doing better on our interest revenue than we had thought. So those are both good developments for the city in terms of the revenue. There are some declines in some of the revenues. They're not major. I think you can see that we had some of the cannabis tax as an example. Those revenues have a trend of a small decline. The ones that where we noticed we had declines in some of our franchise fees and that sort of thing, but nothing major. So they're just kind of a typical fluctuations you see in some of these more variable type revenues. And so the bottom line is we have good news in that we are tracking ahead of our budget in terms of looking at the grand total on our revenues. Happy to answer any questions, or Melissa or I have both looked through all these categories and made all these estimates and revisions as we felt were necessary based on the current results. We have a similar analysis we did for the expenditure side of the house. Good news here is that we had a $23.4 million adopted budget of what we call operating expenses. These are expenses that go on from year to year in the general fund.
I hate to stop. Got a quick question right up here.
Yeah, I know that Morro Bay has a very large property portfolio compared to other towns, and I was just curious which category that any rents or leases accrued in that, or, you know, that I assume we are getting revenues from that.
I believe the majority of those lease revenues are in the harbor fund. So they're not part of this. There are some lease revenues in the general fund, which are probably in the other revenue category because they don't, they're not, but I think the majority of them are in the harbor fund, and we don't have the breakdown in terms of this report for the harbor.
Okay, because presumably rents have gone up quite a bit in the last few years on everything, so just.
I have heard from the harbor director that we're expecting improvements in our lease revenues this year, which is another good thing. But I will be getting back to you on that. We probably, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I believe that's where most of the lease revenues are collected.
On this revenue source category, towards the bottom, it says revenue from use of money and property.
Yep, that's also rents. Those are rents also. Those are rents. Interest income is in there. There is some small, but most of that, I believe, would be the interest income. So it's the use of our money when we invest it.
About the property, I was wondering.
Oh, yeah, and the property is probably some of those. We do have some general fund rentals in there. But I think the bulk of that is your interest, is the investment earnings
right. That
I was speaking about.
I guess just for the record that it would seem that if the value of the revenues. Sorry about that. On it says green. Since we have a moment on revenue and there's a lot of value to revenue, I just often wonder about the general management of some of the simple revenue and how that looks in the future. Certainly nothing we could cover right now, but I just remember when I was in Park and Rec and we were looking at the revenue that the city takes in from, you know, like softball and all that.
Yep.
It's a lot, and we don't do anything to encourage that. I continue to say we're sitting on a gem. The revenue's not going anywhere. We're a beach community. That doesn't happen. And I'm motivated to do some minor managing and just see what can happen from one of these revenue sources like that. I mean, so many people, when in the summer, it's 90 degrees in Bakersfield, they would be using our facilities 24/7. They don't need to sleep if they're playing ball.
But we want their bed sets. I just have a specific question on the other revenues. I don't understand how actual revenues through January 31st are larger than what's estimated at the end of the fiscal year. The 498 versus the 427?
That 2024 actual through 131 column was updated about 10 minutes before this meeting. So it's possible that the projections are now just off because of the adjustment to that category.
Okay.
That came from the audit. Yeah, the estimates were done at the end of close of last week, where we wanted to wait to the last minute. But if anything happened over the weekend, then the actual would have changed, and that would have caused that problem. Yeah.
Okay.
We will adjust that for the final version that goes to council. So this is a draft. So the final version will make that change. Thank you, though, for pointing that out to us.
One question. Under licenses and permits, your licenses, that's business licenses, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and then permits is, I mean, I'm sure I understand this right. Permits would be?
We have encroachment permit, building permits.
Oh, so it was everything under the building permits, under that?
That general category.
I would say in the future, if you could split those two numbers out, between licenses for businesses and your permits for that, I would split those two out personally. I think that would be well worth looking at the two separately.
Thank you, Chair Woody. That's a great suggestion. We can do that.
Okay.
I'll make note of it.
Okay.
Do we have any more questions on our revenue side?
I question.
Oh, sure.
Well, this might go back then to what happened earlier about the accrual. This might have changed since the earlier version we got. Okay. So the sales tax revenue is a lot lower now on this current, the new one that we just received, because of the time lag.
Yes, it's a timing issue.
Yeah, right.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering why it was so high. I thought we're going to be way higher than... Okay, got it.
Okay, I just had a question on interest income. Are you going to cover that in more detail, or is this a good time to...
Oh, no, we can cover it now.
Okay, yeah, and obviously interest rates have gone up a lot. Your revenue has gone up to $568,000 from $170,000. I noticed in the breakdown you had lots of CDs and a bunch in money market, and I'm just wondering, you know, three-month Treasury bills are at 5.2% right now, as low risk as you can get. Anyway, you make those decisions, just
right.
If you had in your mind
sure.
how to optimize that. Even without an investment advisor, it's pretty easy.
Yes. So we view the LAIF as a kind of our short-term money. LAIF does invest in T-bills, and they have an average life of a little over, I think it's around 465 days is their life of investment. So they're very short-term in LAIF. So as you can see, there's a sizable balance the city has with LA Local Agency Investment Fund, which is the state mutual fund, which is like a money market fund. So the state has a large portion of their funds in T-bills. So we're pretty covered there. And as you mentioned, we have a pretty sizable amount of CDs, none exceeding the amount protected by the FDIC and FSLIC, but we have 250,000. We have a fair number of CDs, which are getting a pretty competitive rate out of. And we also have some federal agencies, which are guaranteed not by the full faith and credit, but have a very strong guarantee mm-hmm. from the federal government. And those are ones we can invest and have recently been investing in a longer term, because mm-hmm. we don't know interest rates may be dropped by the Fed come soon, and our interest rate environment may start to drop again. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to make sure that we have a balanced mm-hmm. portfolio that has some very short term returns and also some longer lock in some good rates right now while we can. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the issue. The financial advisor, if that person comes on board, I did a little bit of research on that, and starting on January of last year, had we took $26 million of our portfolio and invested it maybe through some other alternatives, I'm conservatively guessing that there's $200,000 to $300,000 more of interest mm-hmm. we might have been able to earn. Staff did an RFP, and we have 7 responses from different advisors with different fees and that sort of thing. We're evaluating all that, and we'll have a recommendation coming forward at some point. But we're not there yet.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a question kind of relates to what Jean was just talking about. In looking at the portfolio, it looks like 3 of the CDs that are actually some of the longer-term CDs have a significantly lower interest rate. And
yes.
I'm wondering, are there penalties if you pulled out of those CDs?
Yes. yes, there are. And those were probably made during the pandemic times.
But they far outweigh the cost of perhaps.
Yeah, there's usually substantial penalties to pull those. They're certificates of deposit, which means you've locked your money up for that. You're going to get that guaranteed return from the bank, but you're not going to be able to change your mind midstream without a pretty significant penalty that would wipe out any gain you might get from reinvesting it in something okay. more suitable, unfortunately. Yeah. So would that be all of our questions then for the – okay. We can move on to our expenditures on the general fund. This is what I had started on, that we anticipated spending about $23.5 million in general fund operating expenses, and we are coming in lower than that, which is a good thing. That means there's going to be other funds that will be flowing when the final financial statements are prepared, there'll be revenue available that will flow into the unassigned or fund balance that could then be reallocated to other purposes other than operating or available for operations in the next year's budget. So it's all good. Most of our savings are occurring. They're occurring, as you can see, in a number of our categories, but you can see the biggest amount is in our personnel services, largely related to vacancies. When we have vacant positions and there's no benefits paid, salaries not paid, that sort of thing. And so that's a good trend. If you look at some of the other categories, we're actually slightly ahead. In some of our contractual services, we are seeing savings there where we have budgeted a certain amount of work, but if the project doesn't move along as fast or whatever initiative the city's working on, those monies aren't being spent as rapidly as we thought they would be for whatever reason. So we have savings there projected too as well. So the bottom line is we come in at $21.7 million, we think, for our general fund estimated expenses for the year. So this is a summary of our general fund only. And as you can see, we have right now we're expecting an increase and recommending it. This is a little different than what the other item showed you, because these are the ones where we're recommending an actual revenue budget adjustment change. And so we're going to be recommending a budget adjustment, which means we're going to increase our adopted budget. We're going to increase that in the case of revenues by recommending to the city council. We're going to increase that $615,488. That's an improvement from the adopted budget. On the expenditure side, on the adopted budget for certain categories, we're going to be recommending an increase also. Increasing that adopted budget. And you can see that when you have an increased revenue or increased expenditure that's above your increase to revenues, that means you have $158,000 of monies of excess budget that you're going to be increasing on the expenditure side that you need to cover. And that's where the savings come in to fund that. Had we not projected savings on our expenditure side, we wouldn't have a place to go to see where we would have funding to accommodate these recommended budget adjustments. We would have to pull it from our starting fund balance in the general fund. And luckily, because of the trends we see this fiscal year, when council sees this next week, we will be able to recommend that these can be approved, because we expect savings on the expenditure side to more than cover this additional request on the expenditure side. And I'm hoping that makes sense.
So because the estimated now is like the expenditures are like $1.5 million lower than what was already adopted in the budget.
We're seeing, as an example, we're not changing the adopted budget for salaries and benefits.
Right.
However, we have savings there. That's going to pay for this $158,000, to make it very simple, yes.
Right, okay.
I'm just looking at the fund expenditures by department. So I'm just looking at the numbers that have the largest differential. So maybe, and I also don't understand what they are. So what does that mean, the administrative services?
Melissa can...
That's our department. That's
I was going to say, hopefully there's nobody in this room.
It is. That would be finance. So, yep.
Every time. So that, no, but seriously, so that's just you all, or there's?
That covers everything from the front desk, utility billing, all of our accounting work, budget, and then the admin services director.
And then on the bottom there, the non-departmental transfers.
Non-departmental is going to cover a lot of things that don't fall into specific buckets and are going to impact citywide, and then those transfers are transfers out for, like, capital improvement projects or transfers to, like, the emergency reserves. And sorry, I forgot IT is also in admin services.
Okay, thanks.
Welcome.
Excuse me, I don't want to interrupt, but this was listed as a voter's drop-off.
Right, this is a back.
Don't know.
This one is a voter's drop-off.
How do they, yeah, but if there's a lot more money, they've got IT as
well. Okay.
$500,000 increase. I think it's at the library.
I get big when anything that admin services.
Just to clarify for the meeting, anybody listening at home, somebody came in and needed to know if this was a voter drop-off. So in case there was confusion of anybody listening right now, that's what was happening in the audience. So.
I see. Okay, that makes sense. I got it. Thank you.
So where are we now?
If we could move on now to the Measure E fund, Q&E. Presented here on the slide, you can see that we're looking at it from a very high level. This is important just to get a feeling of what's going on with Measure E, Q&E, is that we have a little bit of a timing problem. It looks a little strange. We have $1.5 million through January 31st of Q&E tax revenue. We're estimating 4.3 for the year, and this is from our advice from our sales tax and HDL consultant. And there's a timing issue. The bulk of this money comes. We're a couple months delay in the timing, and there's a year-end accrual. So I just want to delay any fears on that. That is our estimate for this fiscal year. In terms of the expenditures, as I think had been pointed out in the first draft of this report, we expected a certain amount of fund balance when the budget was done for 23-24 last year. There was a certain amount of beginning fund balance assumed for Q&E fund, and that has now changed, I believe.
From the accruals?
It's reverted back to a positive.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, but as a result of the change to the accruals.
Yes.
Yeah. So just confirming that. So as a result of that change of the accruals, the fund balance is going to be available. And so if you look at the detail report that was the last page of it, of your report, I think that's very helpful to look at. When we looked at fiscal year 23-24 estimated, in the initial report that you received, there was a problem that required a $700,000 adjustment to the expenditure side. Or actually a reduction of, to the expenditure side, correct, in terms of the transfer out. And that problem has gone away for the current fiscal year. You can see that in the very bottom line there, I'm looking at the 2024 estimated, and it's the last page of this report.
Page 19?
The very back.
Yeah, page 20.
Oh, page 20.
Page 20. Okay. I'm sorry, I should have pointed that out.
Numbers?
Page 20 showed in the initial draft before the accounting change from the auditor change of their philosophy had a negative there. And now we show a positive because we have, as we've talked about, a better beginning fund balance. And the intention last year when the fund, this budget was adopted, if you can see that there's we have more expenditures than revenue if you look at the adopted budget on the slide. And that was done intentionally because CFAC wanted to say, why is that money sitting there? Let's spend it. Let's get it, put it to use. So money was budgeted out of the money that was in fund balance. That's why that shows that $5.7 million expenditure with a lower revenue. You normally would want those two to balance, but to use up that fund balance, that's why that occurred. So that was done intentionally. And then, of course, we provide on the far right column our estimates of where we think Q&E will be. We had planned $1 million reduction intentionally in the 23-24 budget, and we're still estimating that will still happen because of the accounting change did not occur from the auditors, and so that remains. However, if you look at page 20, you can see that there are challenges to Q&E in terms of the planned funding for future support of capital programs. Or something needs to change on the expense side in terms of looking at 24 and fiscal year 25, 26, those out years. Staff needs to be looking at this because with our current revenue projections that we have for Q&E, in order to stay up, keep this as a positive balance, we're going to have to make recommendations about different approaches to how these funds are allocated. We have more funds allocated in future years and planned than we have revenue to support in Q&E. And that's where we're going to be looking for feedback from the committee on that, because we'll be in the adopted budget phase of the operation very quickly, and so we need some of your feedback in terms of the allocation of those funds. Yes, we've asked for the committee.
I kind of came in about a year and a half ago, and this was where a lot of it started. So you said future support of capital projects. Is that?
Yeah, these are planned in the capital improvement plan.
Right.
So, for instance, if you see the $2.6 million to the pavement,
right,
annual pavement program, In earlier projections and forecasts, there was at least a hope that some of these sizable contributions, transfers from Q&E, could go over to for the paving program.
Right.
And what we're saying is the way the revenues are trending right now,
right,
that isn't there isn't revenue for that support. And so
yeah,
we have to look at all these categories. And if the committee says I'll just make it simple. If we were to say fund less personnel for public safety with Q&E as an example, funding would have to come, would then revert to the general fund. It would, because some other funding source has to pick that up.
Right.
So there's always, if you pull a brick out of here, there's another brick that needs to come in,
right,
in terms of funding source.
Okay.
So that's one of the things, but I think has been a kind of a practice in finances that we've been assuming a similar use of the Measure Q&E monies from year to year, supporting the public safety, fire, police that were in the measure.
Right, right.
However, if there were going to be some changes to that, we were looking for the committee's feedback.
So well, I don't mean to interrupt you, to clarify this real quick. So in essence, what you're saying, and I'm sorry about that.
No,
just to clarify this, what you're saying is we can't just simply, or the city cannot just simply say, take it out of the employees from the police department. Nobody's recommending that, but
no,
for example, because then you move one brick over here, now you're taking out of the general fund.
Yes.
Now you just kicked it over here to this problem,
yes,
over here. Okay,
yeah.
Just want to make sure we just had that clarified.
Yes.
Okay.
So then to your point, really the only one I can speak on, because it just came up when I had started, so I followed it a lot, was I feel the consultant fees, for one, but in general and specifically, the consultant fees that are being used for the roundabout is to me, I can't understand how that fell under Q&E. I know it's been voted on, and I don't know how far down the lane it is, and I don't know if it could be changed, but it just never made sense to me. And I've been looking at it for about a year here. It just doesn't fit to me.
Is now a good time to respond, or do you want to wait until Dan or Chair? But currently, consultant fees are not being paid for by CUNY. So we've had SLOCOG grants and Caltrans grants paid for, paying for consultants.
Wait, I'm sorry, I'm confused, because I have reports that specifically allocated over something like the $600,000 to be paid. So is that being paid from somebody else?
As a contribution to the roundabout project, yes, but those monies have not been spent yet. So the roundabout has several funding sources.
And no, that's fine. My only confusion is that on expenditures under Q&E on capital improvements, the consulting for the roundabout was one of them.
So, and, you know, we may not have time today to go through a full accounting of that project, but there are several funding sources for that project, and then there are different phases. And so we are in a phase where we're utilizing consultants to prepare environmental reports, but that is not being paid for by Q&E. That's been paid for through Caltrans grants, SLOCOG grants, and also development impact fee money that the city has. And so the city has allocated $600,000 a year since 2021 through Q&E money towards that project as a contribution towards that project. We haven't spent that money yet. That money, the idea was that it would be used during construction of the project.
So we're back to, so the $600,000 has been allocated, it hasn't been spent.
That's correct.
So I'm back to, I'm still would be objecting to it being even allocated, especially we're talking maybe 3 years more of research into projects that's multi-millions, and that really we're not even sure how much of a need there is and on like that. I mean, we could have a guard there when school's going. It just financially, it doesn't make any sense to me, a three-year out, $600,000 allocation just for consulting. I'm sure that consulting is really important. I just don't know if the project's important.
If I can ask a question on top of that. Okay. My understanding, correct me on this, is that what we were doing is we were using $600,000 a year out of Q&E, and we were, in essence, banking that money for this anticipated project. Am I on the right track, or am I wrong?
That's correct. But I would add that, so, again, the City Council passed a resolution, I believe, in November 2021
yes.
that we would be banking that money.
Correct.
And that was to show SLOCOG, our major funding partner for that project,
correct.
That the city had skin in the game.
And we had, yeah, we had a commitment to it.
Exactly.
Right.
And but we have not spent that money yet, and when we do, it wouldn't be for consultants. I do want to be clear about that. That said, the city's current strategy is to try to give the project to Caltrans. Mm-hmm. And we may be able to pull back some of those allocations of Q&E because, again, they haven't been spent yet. And so right now what you may see in the report is the fulfillment of that commitment that we made in 2021 to right. allocate around $600,000 a year towards this project through not only Q&E but really any funding source.
And that was – and without getting to the debate of the roundabout,
sure,
which
yeah.
there are 500 opinions on that, but
sure.
the policy has been set on that. In order to fund that policy, that was the direction back in 21, was to allocate $600,000 a year, in essence, to show that we have skin in the game. Because if we're going to have – if they're going to come in on board, they want to know that we're on board on this as well, that we're committed.
Yes. And then the only other point I'd want to make on that is, again, we may have an opportunity to not have to spend that money
right.
if Caltrans takes over the project, which is a kind of complicated thing we could talk about. But I do just want to emphasize we have not spent or planned to spend that Q&E money this year. It's more just of a banking situation.
Okay, and the $600,000 a year that's being banked at this point, how much have we banked so far, ballpark?
I'd have to look. I think it's around $2 million.
Okay, but that does not necessarily mean that we're going to spend $2 million on, quote, consultants. That is just our $2 million commitment, and it could be for many different aspects of this.
Correct, and it's not only Q&E.
Yes, I'm sorry.
I just want to be clear about that. So probably around $1.2 million, and again, I'm doing this from memory, about $1.2 million in Q&E, and then we have DIF and TIF fees, which are development impact fees and project-specific fees that we can't spend the money on really anything else except for capacity upgrades at that intersection.
Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Okay. Another thing I want to ask about is the idea of consultants. Because I hear this term thrown around quite a bit. Tell me if I'm wrong on this. A lot of times government agencies and many people in the private sector will also use consultants. And the ones that come to my mind are things like soil companies or whatnot, because what we're doing is the intent of a consultant is to hire out to do have a company do something for us that we simply do not only don't have the technical expertise to do, we don't even have the equipment to do. And the one of them would be, that comes to my mind, is a soil exams, soil test for, you know, for your soils, which is you hire a company to do this, you have your licensed technical experts doing this, and they go back to a lab that has an extraordinary volume of very expensive equipment that we simply don't have. And if we were to go out to hire those consultants, put them on our payroll, and buy all that equipment, it would be a number clear, very high, as opposed to what we could get it just simply by contracting with them.
Yes.
Okay.
Biologists, archaeologists, all sorts of folks. And these studies are required by Caltrans as part of an environmental process that we're bound to.
Yeah, and a lot of that comes through things that we simply can't hire. I mean, we could. We hire anybody we want, I suppose, or the council can, obviously. But just making sure that, you know, a consultant a great many times, if not every time, is actually can be the most cost-effective. Sometimes it doesn't politically look the way that it should to a lot of people because they'll think that a consultant is nothing more besides somebody's just going to come in and give us an opinion on something. And that's not what we're doing here. What we're doing here is we're trying to give the community the best bang for their buck by getting people in there that we're required to do by law.
Yeah.
And if we don't, yeah, we have no choice besides to do this. And the most cost-effective way many times would be to hire out privately and to privatize it as opposed to bringing them in.
Yes, I would agree with that. And I would just also, maybe for the CFAC's benefit, explain that, you know, I am making a distinction between consultants and contractors. So consultants
yes.
are sort of the professional experts that we hire to do things that we can't do on our own that are required for the process. A contractor, which we ultimately may spend Q&E money on, that's the construction work.
Yes.
And so that's, you know, if the city does keep that project, we would use the Q&E funds for that construction work.
Okay.
I just wanted to add, Member Dorfman is not crazy. We did present a slide that showed Measure Q&E expenditures for that project, and that was just simply assuming that what was spent in the year was from Measure Q&E. So I apologize for not doing better work at digging into the source.
Okay. I'd like to move on now to look at the Q&E expenditure side of the house. We looked at the revenues and get our slide going here in a second. So on the expenditure side, first thing I'd like to point out, it might be helpful to also look at page 20 of the revised report we gave you because that's got some breakout on terms of the 23-24 estimated. You'll see that the adopted budget estimated a $5.7 million expenditure budget, and we're coming in a couple hundred thousand below on our estimates for actual costs, which is, once again, a good thing. $5.5 million approximately on the estimated side. The other thing I wanted to point out is that we had initially thought we would need to adjust our transfers. We wouldn't have the sufficient revenue to make our transfer commitments in 23-24, but you can see that the estimated column shows the full transfers occurring in 23-24, so you could, that would be available or be evident in looking at, like, for instance, on the fiscal year 24 estimated column on page 20, you can find the annual pavement support of $1,840,000. That can be made this year. We're anticipating that that would be made. There are sufficient funds because of the fund balance available in Q&E to make those planned transfers as was planned in the budget. So those right now, the way we're estimating our expenses for the year, those will occur. It's in the years beyond that we see negatives start to develop where we were looking for that feedback, and that's where we're going to have to really craft knowing what we have available in annual revenues and the $4.7 to $5 million dollar revenue we're looking out in the future. How those monies are going to be allocated is where we have asked some advice from a committee in terms of, now the council may or may not listen, but you know, this is your opportunity to because you are an advisory body, but you know, and you can certainly make those requests, and staff will definitely take note of them, and we will work as best we can, but they may or may not all be implemented. I do want to put that out there, that that's just the reality of it. But yeah, so we do see savings there, and we're able to keep these commitments in the adopted budget in terms of those plan transfers. It's just looking at next year is where we start to see that we need to look at some possible changes to things.
You know,
so that's, it's actually inevitable that we'll have to do this.
The obvious one to me is under the forecast column for fiscal year 2025, when we get down to capital and what's being expended. Obviously, in every one of these that I'm seeing on here, just glancing through this, you know, payment management program, et cetera, goes from 1.8 to 2.6. In this entire column, I'm seeing a bump in each one of the numbers. Is there a reason why the fiscal year 25 is looking that way as opposed to the previous years for 24 and 23? Is there something?
And these amounts were taken, Mr. Public Works Director, from the capital improvement plan, adopted budget, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you for the question, Chair Woody. So, so you're asking about the 2.6 number and why it's there and why it's above and beyond the previous years?
Well, actually all the numbers. If you look through, you know, fiscal year 24, just go to the first line, active transportation plan, active corridor studies, 67,000. We have projected to use 136,000 the following year, the next line 150 to 200,000.
So these are placeholder numbers for the active transportation plan and the LRSP implementation. So that's the out years there that you're seeing the higher numbers are not actually for the plan. It's, we've done the plan, now we want to try to do the work. And we don't have yet specific projects identified for that money. What we would do is go look for the grants that that these plans allow us to apply for, and then we'd need some sort of matching money at the ready if we did obtain any grants. For the paving, I believe the $2.6 million number comes from a study that we did a year or so ago that showed that, like, the bare minimum to have some while tolerating some loss in our pavement condition index citywide, if we wanted to maintain our road so that we didn't drop off too far, we'd have to spend minimum 2.6. I think to keep our current pavement condition index, we'd have to spend around $4 million a year. And so, we are terribly underfunded in terms of our road maintenance.
So, in other words, if we were just as a hypothetical, walk out here and say, okay, look, here's the game plan. We have fiscal year 24 numbers. Just put them into 25. We're just going to hold the line, and this is what we're going to do. What we're under the impression from you is that that's fine. We have the ability to do that as a city for policy, but the long-term ramification is that we're going to end up, in essence, falling further and further behind on all these type of capital projects and the needs of this community and the needs of our infrastructure.
Yes, and if I may add, that's a correct assessment. In the case of pavement management, the farther you drop off, the more expensive it is to come back up. So it's easier to, let's say, put slurry seal on a road to protect it from the rain if it's already in good condition.
Sure.
Versus reconstruct a road. It's exponentially more expensive.
So every year it gets worse and worse and worse.
Then that means we're deferring costs that are going to be even more and more and more.
Correct. Okay.
I'd like to move on, if I could, to the next fund type. We have this, the city has a number of enterprise funds, large enterprise funds. We have a harbor, water, and sewer, and transit enterprise funds. Those are tracking according to budget for the most part. We do have one budget adjustment that we're recommending to use $20,000 of transit fund balance to purchase a new bus. And there's several budget amendments to recognize harbor grant funds, and that's we strongly recommend those because we have matching our grant revenue to go along with those increase to the expenditure side, so there's a matching revenue with those. As pointed out here on the slide, we do have some budget amendments, and we have a net increase to the revenues in the Harbor Fund of $2,000 at this present time in terms of a requested budget amendment on the Enterprise Fund. So looking at our long-term fiscal outlook for the city, as we've had some discussion already, we have some revenue shortfalls in the coming years, especially in the Measure Q&E fund that we need to look at and make sure that we match our operating revenues and expenses. And so that will be a task that the city will be taking on along with this committee to figure out how we best manage through those issues. The Measure E allocation will have to be looked at because we don't have ongoing. We can't make these same level of planned commitments that are present in the adopted budget that we anticipated a year ago. So we're going to have to look at it more globally in terms of Measure E, how those funds best be allocated. And that's part of this fiscal year adopted 24-25 work that the city will be, that's the next phase of our work. And, of course, we have already gotten feedback from the committee on some areas to look at, and thank you for that. We also will be looking at our reserves. We have very healthy reserves for the city, and that's a good thing. Approaching, you know, very high levels, over 30%. Some cities have much lower levels, and we are, it's been sort of a trend within California and also nationwide to look at a more risk-based approach, meaning what is the risk, what is the true level of reserve you really need to keep as your rainy day fund. And we're going to be looking at that and seeing if there's a possible, especially in years when we may have when we have a longer out-term outlook that we think things will turn around and start to improve, then you can wisely, you know, recommend using some of these reserves and maybe not keeping quite as high a level of them. But you want to do that based on a real good study of what your risks are in doing that. And so we'll be looking at possibly bringing – that would require – to change a reserve would require a policy change. That would mean a staff would have to recommend that. Committee might want their input on that. That would then go forward to council, and it's a council policy for the reserves, what levels they're set at, and that would have to change through a city council action.
Can I comment on that?
Yes.
Because I know that back in May, Steve Peck commented specifically on that issue, that at the time the reserves levels were so high, he felt that it could easily be set at 25%, and that would still be a sufficient cushion. And if you go back to this issue on the street paging, and that was very helpful to understand, the more you delay and go under budget, the more exponential future costs become. I would think that, and that's the one thing that citizens really notice about their government at work, and that makes them very happy. They got so excited about the paving that was done last year, and I would think that would be one initiative that would generate a lot of enthusiasm and potential for possibly looking at a change in the reserve policy.
Yeah, I was going to comment that the previous city I worked at, we had reserves levels that were fairly high, and I'm fairly conservative because I always planned. I think most finance directors like to have a rainy day fund just because there's things that happen that you just didn't foresee happening. And anyway, long story short on that is we eventually moved to a 25% reserve in my last city. So this reserve level that we've set here is very conservative and could be, you know, an area that based, but we'd want to look at all of our risks in terms of what we, you know, I would recommend waiting until staff can do that study and look at that, and we'll bring, but we are considering it, and we're going to bring it forward at some point. I think we had said in our slides we'd have this as our Q&A, but we've been doing Q&A on an ongoing basis. So I think we can go ahead and move, unless Chair has further questions, because we were going to move into some of the budget amendments that are being proposed.
Just to put in perspective, when will the City Council be presented with this in our proposals?
Be presented with the mid-year?
Yeah, when will this be presented to?
Yeah, it's agendized for next council meeting.
Which is when?
It is the 27th.
Next week.
Oh, it's next week. Got it.
I have a technical question, I guess. On the mid-year budget, if you look at the general fund, and I'm assuming that you get all sorts of guidance on how to forecast ahead, percentages or whatever. I just noticed, for example, going from fiscal year 25 to 26 on the sales tax for the general fund, the increase is 3%, but then if you do the tax revenue for Q&E from 25 to 26, it's only 2.5. Shouldn't it be the same?
We get those estimates from HDL, our sales tax consultant, and so the revenue base for Q&E is different than the revenue base for the city sales tax in terms of what's taxable and what isn't. There's a different tax base for Q&E versus the 1%.
Okay.
Yes, it's interesting. Not all items that get taxed on Q&E are taxed for the city side.
Yeah. Okay.
And so those may have different those have different trends of growth, and that's why they're recommending a little different rate.
Hmm. Okay.
We do have, as we mentioned, as part of this report, if you look at the big sheet, we have a list of a number of budget amendments that we'll be taking forward to the council next week for official approval where the budget would get amended. And we're available for any questions on these. You can see there are a variety of them, and they are all detailed in this rather large attachment. And all of them use a large number of them have matching revenues that go along that accompany them, so they really don't have an overall effect to the budget. But as I mentioned in the earlier slide, we are having to use some general fund savings to pay for some of the ones that don't have a matching revenue to go with them. They are broken out. In terms of on your report, they are broken out by fund, which is that GL string, and also it's mentioned on the far left column, the fund.
In very quick non-CPA terminology.
Yes.
Can we list the difference and tell me very quickly the difference between transfers in and transfers out? Because I caught this the other night and I understood it, and then all of a sudden I didn't understand it.
Okay. So transfers in and transfers out generally in a budget always balance. You should have one fund with a transfer out, mm-hmm. monies moving from one fund to another. That fund will have a corresponding transfer in, and they should balance.
It's like a balance sheet.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, they're actually revenue and expense items, but yes.
Okay.
So they should balance.
Okay. This is tough because this was the amended one we were just all given right before this meeting.
For this list,
so I apologize for the silence at this point.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Take your time. But for this list, the only thing that has changed besides me putting it in a more logical order is the $700,000 reduction. Those are the only – there's three of those technically, one from Measure E and then two from the General Capital Improvement Projects Fund.
Okay.
But that's all that's changed.
Okay.
Oh, goodness.
One of the things we wanted to point out that, you know, a number of these that don't have funds occur, you know, largely in the general fund, but we do have savings that will pay for these. And I also wanted to point out that when finance did this work to prepare this recommended budget adjustment listing, had asked each of the departments, the line departments that are requesting these changes to their adopted budget, to look within their department first. Okay, do you have savings elsewhere that you could recommend? And we were pretty adamant that they scour their budgets to look for other opportunities to move funds between, like, move money from one account to another within their line department. And these are the ones that didn't have a funding source or a way to move money from this particular account to this other one that needs more funding. So these are the ones that we, after doing all that level of work, are the ones that remained that we needed to bring forward to council to get them approved.
You know, I was just looking at numbers and something stood out, and then I go down the aisle and here we are. So again, it doesn't fit. The deposit for the city cost related to the battery project from Vistra, additional deposits requested by developer to cover city costs to the battery project.
So there should be an amendment to it should be to increase $175,000 that we would be receiving from the developer as part of that developer reimbursement agreement, and then an offsetting expenditure of $175,000. So that nets out to zero as far as an impact to the budget.
So we have an improvement to our revenue from a developer reimbursement, but then we have a matching new expense that will be used from that developer money to pay for that. But both of those, one is a revenue increase and one is an expenditure increase, but the net between the two is zero impact to the general fund.
Do you mind explaining what that is, just to have a little background on it without taking too much time away from everything? So that that agreement covers a variety of the different types of studies that are happening for the BESS project. The battery energy, I'm not sure what the SS part stands for yet. We receive that funding through the developer reimbursement agreement in those tranches of $175,000. So full transparency, we're not planning on spending $175,000, but we had to ask for that as part of that agreement. So it's actually covering about $90,000 off the top of my head of consulting work that's being done, coordinated by the fire chief, related to some sort of safety analysis. Mm. Thank you.
But I'm kind of, I guess, trying to look at the whole big picture, because these are all the little details, I
yes.
guess. The whole big picture is from the, we have first the adopted budget from whenever it was adopted. And now it's looking like that budget, we're going to be quite a bit better off, like almost $2 million better off, since we have more revenues, or it's projected we have more revenues than our adopted budget. It's projected we have less expenses from our adopted budget, which total almost $2 million. And this is just $157,000.
Correct. Of budget amendment increase, budget adopted
right.
budget that is not doesn't have a new matching revenue with it.
Right. Okay.
Correct.
The citywide impact is just over $200,000. It was $158,000 from the general fund.
Yeah. Just
okay.
from the general fund.
The general fund impact was what I mentioned, $158,000.
Right.
Yeah. We wanted to provide that information because we knew that we would have requests that were coming in that did not have a matching revenue. And so we needed to give some assurance that these monies could, that these could be approved without causing a problem budget-wise. And that's why we provided all that detail.
Right. So on the $100,000 under the harbor CIP, and then it talks about a grant. Was that grant received? I'm not sure I understand.
We only do budget adjustments for grants if they have been awarded. And many of these are going to be reimbursement-based, so we're going to budget for the whole amount, but the actual revenue received will only match the actual expenditures in that fiscal year.
Okay.
I did want to point out too that this additional information you received, it's kind of important to see that if on the very top page we presented the ones that would, these are current year amendments that have already been approved by council during the fiscal year. Wanted to point that out, and then you can see that we also on the second page have the revenues and transfers in that were new requests that are part of the new budget, brand new, and have not been approved by council, will be approved as part of the agenda item going forward. But this is a complete listing of ones that are new to be proposed and also ones that have already been approved by council during the fiscal year. And of course, we're available if there are any more questions. Otherwise, I think we would request that I believe our staff report has asked for the committee's recommendations on these to go forward to council. That you recommend they go forward and be approved. I'd like to be able to say that the committee felt that was their recommendation.
So, very quickly before we do that, so what we ended up doing is when we received a grant, and I'm going back through the previously approved by the council on the sheet, take the front page just as random, that when those grants were awarded, that means we took the money that we said we would commit to that grant, and that was our commitment to it. So we received this grant, so now if the city's going to kick in that $40,000 or $50,000. Is that my reading this correct?
We'll budget for the full expenditure amount. So if we know that we're going to be receiving $100,000 in grants and we're going to be, but we're only actually going to be spending maybe $25,000 of city funds that won't be covered by that grant, mm-hmm. you're still going to budget for that full $100,000, plus whatever we actually expect to spend. And whatever's being covered by the grant would be offset by that revenue.
Okay.
So staff is asking and has asked for, the committee's feedback on terms of the allocations of the, before we begin the work for the 24-25 budget in terms of how we're allocating the CUNY revenues. And also that you'll be recommending these budget amendments that we're bringing forward for the mid-year, which we have provided information in terms of the funding sources and that sort of thing. So those are the two main asks that we have of the committee. Hopefully we're getting more towards, Mr. Chair, that we're getting more towards your hopes of requesting asks of this committee and getting our goal.
Okay. A couple comments. First of all, I think the best way to do this for all of us is, as a group, is to say, okay, take each individual's opinion and let's make sure that it's part of their staff report. I think it would be a mistake to say, if you had an opinion on something, that we sit there and say, well, now we're going to debate your one opinion and we're going to vote on it, whether or not we're going to send the city council. I think the most productive way is just to take the individual input, take some notes on each of us and say, okay, here's the type of feedback that we got back. Now, if this doesn't work for this meeting, I'm sure Chairman Peck will come in here and correct me on this in the next month. But I just want to make sure everybody's voice is really heard for the city council. A couple comments. I think most people understand this, and if you don't, I think people need to understand that city budgets are difficult. They're not easy. If they were easy, people would not be staying up late at night, or as I'm sure you guys had to do, give up your entire weekend to fix this because the group that you were working with decided to come to you at the last minute and say, hey, by the way, this accrual issue, we changed it at the last minute. Sorry we ruined your weekend, but here you go. A couple things. Number one, I would like to see, personally, I don't think any of these issues you're going to solve overnight. Maybe I'm wrong, but you can't solve these overnight. These have to be long-term commitments by the city as a whole, in particular city council staff and all of us, even us sitting up here. The first thing that I would say is when I see a line item in here that talks about $12 million for, I believe, employee salaries or the employment of our city employees, I think, and then we also see a comment that's on our slides up front that say these numbers are below the market average for similar cities or regional cities or whatnot. I think one thing that I would have a question on is that when we calculate our employees being below market average for other competing cities, are those salaries based on just other government agencies, or are we also calculating in and comparing that to what comparatively people are making in the private sector? I know there's a lot of people working here in the city of Morro Bay itself that are working late nights at restaurants, waiting tables, on. And I think it's fair to say a lot of them are not making a fraction of what a lot of the city employees are making here. And so when I see numbers that say we have these people here that are making, you know, far less below, what's available market-wise, are we just simply comparing that to other government agencies, or are we taking consideration what the average salary is for somebody living here in Morro Bay?
I'm obviously not the HR director or city manager, but I guess my response to that is that government is, in many respects, like any other industry. In other words, if you're in the if you're in e-commerce or if you're in any kind of industry, you've got to pay competitive wages, or you won't get commensurate staffing the way make comparisons with others. It's just that this is the government industry, and so I believe most of the salary and benefit comparisons are within the government industry, local government specifically, maybe county government, but yeah, it's within the government industry is where those comparisons are occurring. And I understand your comment, though. I do understand that.
Yeah,
within that industry.
Okay, just hold on just one second, okay. Because that does become a concern amongst a lot of people that these positions, and I think I've made this clear over the years, is that I think the staff here is second to none. I really do. I do not think for one second that there's anybody working on the city staff that is anything less than an amazingly stellar individual. So, I hope people can take those comments in that, in that frame. But there's also that side of it that says, okay, when you look around and you see what people are making every day and how they're struggling every day and how, especially with what happened with the pandemic and, where some people were talking about, regionally, not this government, but regional government talking about how, well, maybe we'll have to work from home or we have to take a 5% cut or whatnot. People were losing everything, So while I was listening to some of my friends who were working in government positions, and everybody was struggling. People on the other side of it who weren't in government jobs that didn't have as much guarantee or much of a life preserve on this, they lost everything. I mean, literally, I mean, they were just 2 weeks later, they were out of a job. That was it. They were done. Their career through, all gone. You know, so my first concern on this is that I would tell the city council that when you make these decisions to do, you know, your payroll, your negotiation contracts and whatnot, is that keep that in mind. These people are extremely talented here in the city of Morro Bay. I think they're extremely gifted. I've never met one here that I may have disagreed with some of them, but I don't think is anything less than a top-notch individual as far as their work. So I would definitely make sure that we look at, like running any private business that we've all done. You run a private business, you just got to look at the reality of this is what we can pay our employees. I mean, that's it. The second thing, so the first thing I would say is I would tell the city council, think long term. When you go into those negotiations for your employees, you know, make sure you also take a look around at, you know, what other people are making in non-government jobs around here as well, because a lot of them aren't making that much money. I mean, they're just barely making it by on pennies. And so, like I said, that's not a disparaging comment towards the employees. It's just a reality of finance. And we, and I personally hope, I hope the council keeps that in mind when you go into your negotiations. The other thing I would say is, one of the things that has concerned me since I've gotten on CFAC, and I've always looked at this community as being a prime example of it being as old as it is, and considering we are next to an ocean which breeds a lot of salty air, I really feel bad for our public works department, because I know that underneath these roads and whatnot, we have a tremendous infrastructure project problem going on. I mean, if you think the roads are bad, stick a camera under the roads and take a look at those pipes. That thing, those are just falling apart left and right. I think one thing that this community needs to take a serious look at sometime in the future is, as much as we have Major Q and Major E, is that we have to start looking at, for some finance revenue stream that we can put into place to finally take care of our infrastructure in this town that has been dilapidated for decades now. And it's not because of anything that happened this year or last year. It wasn't because of what happened with the pandemic. It's because this is something that has been going on for generations. And I think the city of Morro Bay needs to sit down and have a real good conversation over what potentially we could do with other revenue stream or potential revenue stream that could be asked of the voters, and possibly put something on the ballot to ask the voters and explain to the community, this is what we're dealing with. You know, and I think if I had to say there were two things that I would want the city council to think in terms of, is those two items, and make sure that this is thought of in terms of a very long-term basis, because we won't solve this problem sitting up here, and you guys are not going to solve this next week by any stretch of imagination. And it's a tough situation for everybody. But I hope everybody takes these comments for what they're meant. They're meant to be constructive, and not at all meant to say, you know, that there's any employee here that is not worth their weight in gold to me or doesn't do an amazing job. Whether I agree with them or not, I've said this from the beginning, I think you've got the right people everywhere. But it's just sometimes these discussions have to take place. And I hope they're taken, those comments are taken for what they're meant as.
Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, just to...
I'll go ahead and recognize this. It's a little out of order, but yeah, please.
Thank you. To answer the question on the compensation study, mm-hmm. It was done just between Morro Bay and other cities similar to Morro Bay. I think between a 2 or 3 hour drive from here, mostly the Central Coast, it was supposed to be similar cities, so not much larger cities. And I think it was 8 cities that we did the comparison study with, mm-hmm. and it was just in roles that we could find similar roles in other cities.
Sure.
So that was done in conjunction with the SEIU, our representation group.
Okay. Thank you very much for clarifying that. Thank you. And please, any other comments, please? Yeah.
Well, I mean, getting back to our original purpose, perhaps. Or at least the business item. My personal thought is the way the year has looked so far, actual and projected to the end is so much better than the adopted budget in the first place, and these changes are fairly minimal and obviously well thought out. They're very detailed, and so I personally would encourage the council to approve them and put them in the new budget.
I'll have my, yeah, nothing might be here. My suggestions or thoughts that I'd like to pass on is, one is, if we can manage revenue like it's our own business, and whatever that means, that would just be extremely impressive. And I've been in a lot of coastal communities, and I've been in a lot of mountain communities with ski resorts, and I've seen it. And now, again, we have a gem here. The other is, the citizens want streets paved. And I thought what you said was very, you know, informational, because I would have thought, let's just put it off. But, I'm looking around at the streets in Essen, and with all this rain, there's, like, all these new cracks are showing up and the whole thing. And I think most of, you know, the numbers support that. And with that, I just don't think Q&E should be involved in this, in the roundabout project. And we have so much deficiency serving the community at large with our street projects. I don't see where it fits in to this measure. And again, that's my opinion on it. I know it's already voted on, and I'm sure that this doesn't have anything to do with it. But what doesn't fit, that just, it doesn't fit. And we're talking about our streets, and we're worried about participating in a project that, you know, I could go on and on about the megatron of the project. So thank you.
I had one comment related to a letter that was sent to the committee. I think it was Helene Finger, and some very interesting and good points about how we aren't potentially optimizing our TOT and short-term rental revenues. And I think that there's goes back to it, whether the consultant is optimizing and keeping the people happy and the monitoring of all that, and maybe that's could be a potential big revenue enhancement if there were more rigorous enforcement, because there is a belief that there is a lot of non-adherence to the short-term rental policies by people renting and not getting paying or getting not getting caught. Anyway, it could be a big potential revenue source.
I would like to comment on that, because, you know, staff has been made aware of that. That's an issue, and we actually, through our consultant, have been able to get a download of STR, and we are able now to see when, which we've just recently, within the past month, have received this data, and we're going to be working with that along with our community development department to see what we can do to step up that. We haven't had a dedicated, we've outsourced, you know, our business license program, so we haven't had a dedicated in-staff person, but we believe, because we've been able to get the download, we think we can identify those ones that are not showing any activity and following up on those, at least getting our vendor then to say, can you check? We now know that this particular address has not submitted a trans TOT revenue. And we now have matching. We've created a match between street address and business license permit number, and we're making great progress on that. And I think we'll have some good news report that we're going to make some progress on that.
Okay, well, that's yes. Great to hear.
Sorry to keep everybody here, but just on that note, going back to running the revenue like it's our own business, oftentimes business will take a timeout and they'll have someone come in and they'll look it over and then say, oh, you know, you're actually running at 50% capacity, if you can imagine that, which is no big deal. But for us, there's no reason to be running at 50% capacity. We're too closely knit. And again, we have this Emerald City here. So, but thanks for getting on that, because we see the leaky boats. It's just a matter of who wants to talk about the leaks and who wants to repair them.
Yeah, we think we have a really good head start now to try to address this problem.
Yeah, and if I could just make one other comment on this. You know, back to something I asked earlier and everybody kind of caught this one, under licenses and permits that are conglomerated together, you know, obviously break those out. If that would be really helpful in the future.
But one we can easily do.
Okay, yeah. I don't want you to work all weekend on that
one. For Melissa, but I think we can break that out.
Yeah, it's easy for you. You're just going to tell Melissa to do it. So, yeah.
That one we should be able to accomplish.
In order to do something like that. Now, this brings up an interesting aspect because I know Brian's always talked about this, and he's right, is this issue of, you know, what can we do in order to explore revenue gains in this community? Because we always talk about cuts. Let's talk about gains. And he's got a good point on this. One of them, under licenses and permits. Now, I don't have any of those numbers in front of us right now because this detail of it wasn't on the agenda. But if you take those two items themselves, and we have an estimated on page, and I'm looking at page 7, if we have an estimated for fiscal year 24 of just over $725,000 for the two, and the total, somebody say real quick, what was the total budget estimated for this year?
577.
Thank you.
577.
Brilliant. I meant for the total budget for the entire city. It's like $20 million for the general fund. Okay. So here we have an item here that has, I'm not even going to do quick math in my head because I don't want to. But here you have an item where you have licenses and permits that we're charging people. Now, our business license fee is remarkably low here from what I can see, from what I've had to deal with. I know there's some businesses that I'm sure would disagree with me because they're paying different amounts than I have to do. But, you know, when you take a look at our permit fee system for building permits and whatnot, is there a way that, you know, the city council could look at potentially having a revenue decrease on licenses and permits? Don't everybody lose it on me when I say that, but you cut those amounts, decrease your business license rates to people and decrease your permit rates to people that we're charging people. And is there something that we could do in terms of that that will actually help stimulate more growth here? It's that proverbial, you know, do we make it more business friendly? Can we make something more business friendly, make it more cost effective for the private sector, and therefore we might have less money coming in the future, but therefore we can stimulate more economic growth? And yeah, it's a financial hypothetical. I understand that. But it's maybe something to also discuss with the city that instead of just doing the proverbial, let's just cut everything and increase taxes, what if you lower your tax rate a little bit and help increase which helps increase your revenue?
We will have made note of that, and we will explore that as another option to look at.
Yeah, okay.
Again, apologies, but on that note, simple things that are done in these other tourist recreational areas is they offered tax breaks to people who came to do films, you know, to the film industry. So all of a sudden, Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Albuquerque, New Mexico, and that whole corridor in between became this mega place for the movie industry because they could bring all their people there. They set up, and they were extremely tax friendly. Like, we don't have to pass any money. Come do your, you know, multi-million-dollar budgeted film. Again, it just pours over these kind of communities. We're not a normal community. You can't just drop someone somewhere and go, wow, look at all these different type of species of animals. Look at all these different rocks. Look at the volcanic activity.
And along that line, I mean, if you take licenses and permits at $725,000 estimated for the year, if the city council were to come forward, for example, and to say our proposal is for next fiscal year is that we're going to cut business license and permit costs by 20%. Okay. First of all, in an area like the coast of California, much less in California, that would just send shockwaves everywhere to a lot of business people that says Morro Bay is open for business. I mean, people would just be like, what? You're cutting your business taxes and your permit costs in the building department by 20% across the table. Now, it's like I said, that would just be alarming to everybody. Be like, holy cow, what did you guys just do over there? Morro Bay is going down this path. Hey, let's go in there and let's start doing some work in there. So if you cut this 725 by 20%, 150,000, I'm ballparking at this point, you're decreasing your projected revenue for the year by $150,000. And a lot of times that $150,000 is simply nothing more besides is well within the projected as opposed to the final revenue for the end of the year in any given budget year. But what we've done is we've gone out there and we said we cut everything by 20%, and we've just sent a message to everybody saying, come to Morro Bay, this is where you want to do business, while all the other communities out here in this region are saying, well, let's just increase revenue everywhere. You can actually cut taxes and increase revenue and make people excited about being here, which could help stimulate your economy all around. And then you turn around and say, okay, we're also going to look at something that's parallel to Measure Q, Measure E, that says we're going to do something that's going to start investing into our much-needed dilapidated infrastructure, which our Public Works Department has to deal with all the time, which I'm sure Greg loves. And then you set something up along the lines of Measure Q and Measure E that will help finance something like that through revenue that's generated through the people who come here and visit, because we want to be such a tourist community. And it's where the chamber is going. It's where we've gone here for generations now. I would say those are the types of things creatively that I would tell the city council you need to really look at. Think differently than this. Don't worry about saying, oh my gosh, how do we increase our revenues? Walk in here and do something bold and tell everybody we're going to decrease our revenues because our solution is to increase the revenue coming in, as Brian has been pointing out constantly. Let's do the things that bring in the revenue. And that's where I would say those types of things should be looked at as well. There you go.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to point out one hurdle is that a business license is a tax, so that will have to, if the city were to change that, would have to go to the voters, believe it or not.
So to decrease the business tax rate,
The change to the tax would require a vote.
Would it really?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I would be hard pressed to think that if that was put on the ballot, that the voters would say no, let's keep the tax rate as it is, and not decrease it. But I've been wrong before on election day, so that's.
That wouldn't be that.
Yeah,
but the other fees those fees generally, the general California law for the other types of fees, mm-hmm. are that fees should be established at what it costs to provide, so that it's otherwise, if you're providing a government service to a, say, to a developer at a fee below cost, then you've theoretically given a gift of public funds. So you have to be careful as we look at that whole area, but we definitely hear you on this.
But the permits are going into your general fund.
Right.
It's not the development department's not an enterprise fund.
I'm just saying if you were giving a tax break to, or a fee break to a particular entity, you're giving it below the cost of that, what costs the city to provide that break, then there's issues involved in that.
But the city has the ultimate right to set our rates for.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
You cannot legally charge more than the cost of service.
Correct.
You could undercharge that.
But yeah, now, that's.
Yeah. I just want to point that out.
Okay, yeah, and I think that's kind of where I'm going on this is, but, like you said, people ask us to sit up here and, give those suggestions on this and say, okay, how do we, dear City Council, how do we do things a little differently around here? And I think there are some creative ways to do things around here. So there you go.
Thank you. You're looking for a motion on the recommending as committee member Hoverston recommended that like a motion on the.
Yeah, was that a motion on that?
Okay. I'll present a motion that we accept the proposed changes to the budget, that we submit our recommendation to the City Council that they put this in the new budget.
Okay. Do I have a second on that?
I will second.
Vice Chair,
yes.
Member Johnson?
Yes.
Member Dorfman?
Yes.
Member Hoverstein?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Okay. Okay, on to the next item, I believe. Future agenda items that we'd like to put on, or is there anything that anybody on this board would like to see as a future agenda item? I don't hear anything.
To me it seems like our next meeting is supposed to be to review the budget, because that'll be right after the draft of the proposed budget?
It'd be on May, right? May 21st.
Yes, I believe the next meeting, which right now is scheduled for May 21st, I think the overriding agenda item on that one will be the proposed staff's recommendations for Q&E funding allocations for the proposed budget. And, of course, we've received some input tonight, but I imagine there'll be further input from the committee and the public, of course, as we begin our work now for crafting the proposed budget for 24-25.
Okay.
I'd like to suggest maybe just an item related to what you proposed as far as looking at potential strategies to grow the pie and see if other cities have done that successfully or not successfully for that matter. See, you know, I volunteer to do some research on that. There isn't too much work to handle in the next meeting.
I'm on board with that. Some revenue booster ideas.
And you're talking about putting this on for the May agenda, the next scheduled meeting.
I think we're just following up the conversation.
No, I don't know. I agree. I just want to make sure. Yes. Yeah, but you're talking about May, not a special meeting.
No.
Okay. To our city staff, I know this is a very trying time of the year as opposed to the rest of the year, which is only half as trying. Is it possible to have a discussion over something like that and to provide this particular board some ideas that maybe have been seen in other communities in the general region? Or, because I know you guys are slammed right now, and I want to be careful of that with you guys.
Are you proposing this for the meeting in May? And would this be an agenda item to create like a subcommittee, or are you wanting to come back with work already done in May?
Yes, it is scheduled. It would be for May. And what I would say is let's put it on the agenda for May. And what we'll do, let's do this. We'll have a discussion of ideas. Potential revenue growth proposals that that CFAC could come up with in order to help in future fiscal years. Now, this might be an open-ended discussion, but my intent would be into the next meeting that we walk out of it with a potential subcommittee of a couple of us that will sit down after that May meeting, after we have an open discussion and get input from the community, and sit down, have a couple of us as a subcommittee, take those ideas and then present those ideas more formally to the CFAC at the following meeting after May. So I'm not proposing any type of really extensive staff time be put into this at this point, unless there's, you know, some minor things that, you know, you folks can think of that you can put on. But I don't want to, with budget hearings going on right now, I really don't want that to happen to you guys at this point. I'd rather have it on the agenda for public input, and then from there, the goal being to put together a two-member subcommittee that we leave that May, the May meeting from, if that's okay.
I believe, as staff, that would definitely be something we could accommodate.
Okay. And also, those discussions could include a lot of things, from even us sitting down and talking about in a subcommittee, talking about potentially, do we look at ballot measures? Do we look at something to help out with our infrastructure issues and whatnot? So I would say everything would be on the table in that next meeting as far as ideas. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Are there any other items to be scheduled for the next meeting? Okay.
Meeting adjourned.
Not seeing anything else. I believe we're due to adjourn this meeting then. The time is 4:56 right now, and we will call the meeting adjourned then.